You were listening to the Never Meet Your Heroes podcast, conversations with artists about their work and inspiration. I am your host, Anthony Moses Sanchez. Welcome to another episode of Never Meet Your Heroes podcast. And on today's episode, we have Ian McKinnon. So Ian, we'll start with having you introduce yourself and let everybody know where you're from and how you got into your art.
Sure. Thanks for having me on your podcast. I'm Ian McKinnon. I'm from a suburb of Madison, Wisconsin called Monona. And how did I get into my art?
Yeah. Well, it's also fun to hear about, like, what was your life in Wisconsin before you became the wonderful, fabulous gay guy that you are today?
Well, I guess I was just a wonderful, fabulous little gay kid, little gay baby in Monona, but like not having such a wonderful, fabulous time there all the time because of that. Mm-hmm. But, I started performing when I was little. There was a woman who had a neighborhood, you know, group of, for kids who would, you know, do like Alibaba and The Little Match Girl and, you know, little stories like that, Grinch Who Stole Christmas. And so I started doing that. Was really musical as a kid, always, you know, trying to organize kids to put on a show or, you know, play creative games and stuff like that.
That's fun. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did there happen to ever be any video or film of you performing as a little kid?
There must be. Somewhere there is, yeah. These people I knew who were my friends down the street had like a beta video recorder.
Okay.
And so there's like probably a beta tape of this show we did called The Castle in the Jungle.
Oh, right.
Which was the first play I wrote at like, I don't know how old I was. We were little. It was cute. It was fun.
I love it.
Yeah.
So you are kind of a multi-hyphenate artist. So do you primarily consider yourself a performance artist? And then how did you get in to such?
Yeah, I guess I consider myself a performance artist. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I did theater. I have a theater background and did that in undergrad. And then in school, discovered performance art as a medium. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, this is great. It's so creatively limitless. And it can be about gay liberation. And it can be about, you know, the personal's political thought. Oh my gosh, you know, I want to express myself this way rather than just, you know, saying other people's lines and, you know, doing what the director says, which I always had a little trouble with. I would create my own work, you know, and have it be about gay liberation and personal development.
So how did your interest then in performance art, you must have decided, did you decide during your undergrad that you were going to pursue theater?
Yeah. Well, I was getting a degree in acting in undergrad.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was decided, you know, before. And then, but then like junior year, I was like, oh shit, you know, I could do performance art. Found the works of Tim Miller and Holly Hughes, John Fleck, the NEA4, Karen Finley also, but specifically Holly and Tim's work really attractive and really spoke to me and inspired me a lot. And I ended up seeing Tim perform, and connecting with him and then just, you know, feeling so inspired. And then I got like a summer stock job in Santa Maria.
Okay.
Doing like musical theater for the summer, like post-college.
All right.
And Tim was like, oh, you should come to LA and there's a scene for performance art. And I was already in Santa Maria. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, I'll come to LA. I'll try it out. I'll see what the scene's like.
Where did you go to college then? Or what city at least?
It was in Dallas, Texas. I went to Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Wisconsin to Dallas.
Yeah, right.
And then you ended up when you came to Santa Maria, is that when you started thinking about coming out to LA?
Well, I had met him and I had been thinking about it.
Okay.
But when I got that job, yeah. And it just seemed like it made sense. You know, it was just like down the road.
You talked a little bit about gay liberation too, so I don't want to move away from that yet. How would you describe how you got into that or aware of that? Was that in college?
Oh, no. You know, I don't know. How old was I? I must have been like when I was the summer before high school, I picked up an Interview magazine and there was an article about Stonewall in it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? No one told me that there was there's a gay liberation movement. I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, I just was so isolated in Wisconsin and, you know, there's no internet at the time when I was a kid. And,
right.
Well, there was, but it was like, you know, you plugged into the phone, you know, you took the phone line out, you know.
Yeah.
That, I became aware of gay liberation, I guess, at that point, and that there was a movement. And then, it wasn't until like I came out maybe at the end of high school and in the beginning of college that it sort of grew in me more. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized you could put the art in service of gay liberation, it just really clicked for me. You know, I was at a point wanting to work with my own issues and come out more and, you know, claim a gay identity and explore that and understand that. Now here was this like creative medium that was like perfect right. for it.
Something that I wanted to talk about a little later, but we can bring it up now is, you know, you host Queer Mondays, which is here in LA. It's been at Akbar for what? Like
oh yeah.
Five.
Well, Queer Mondays was at Highways.
Oh, it was at Highways before.
Initially. Yeah.
Oh, right.
For like 3.5 years. And then it sort of morphed into Planet Queer, which okay. is at Akbar. And
oh, has, there we go.
I think we're like in our sixth year
okay.
of doing that. Yeah.
But I do feel like people can gravitate there once they find that scene still here in LA. Whereas with gay liberation, your performance art, it kind of makes sense that you would be involved in that. Like that would be a passion. Am I
yeah.
right in putting that?
Oh, totally a passion. Yeah. I mean, you know, I just like to support queer creativity. I think it's important. I think it's really necessary for mm-hmm. the world. And, you know, just, you know, that artists, you know, create the visions and can be ones that help move ideas forward and mm-hmm. and present new ideas, and that the world just really needs queer visions. And yeah, when we started Queer Mondays, there was a group of us doing shows now and then. I was curating like gay men's nights before that.
Yeah.
But it was like inconsistent. So it was like, oh, we got to do a monthly thing. We need like a consistent platform where queer people can like come and work right. on their art and get better and cultivate their visions. And yeah.
I guess I'm connecting it again to your interests earlier in your life and what you're doing now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like a continuation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at Planet Queer as kind of like a creative queer liberation. Like it's,
okay.
it's like activism, like art as activism or mm-hmm. a show as activism. Like I eventually got to a point because I've done so many different types of performance mm-hmm. Since I came to LA. And I mean, it's always sort of had this liberationist intent, but some, you know, some didn't. And it just became more and more important mm-hmm. to me to have that as a framework for what we're doing, that it's like putting a bar show or like a narcissist yeah. fest or whatever people would call things like that, you know, putting that in service of gay liberation, you
right.
know, or putting it in a context
yeah.
where that idea of like people expressing themselves is political, that these creative ideas can like vibrate out and empower people or inspire mm-hmm. them or somehow, you know, hopefully help the world.
Let's talk about how, when you got here to LA then, catch up to that dot of
oh, yeah.
you getting into these other things. So you get to Santa Maria, you decide some roughly that you're going to come to LA.
Uh-huh.
And then what did that look like when you got here?
Well, let's see. LA, you know, when I first came, I did my first show at the Max 10 at mm-hmm. Electric Lodge in Venice. It was the first time they did that. And that was my first performance there. And then I started to hang out around Highways
okay.
performance space in Santa Monica. Saw a lot of the shows there and started to take workshops there with Tim Miller and, you know, performing there slowly. And yeah, it seemed to me that there had been like a really strong, vibrant scene there around ACT UP and
oh,
around
right.
AIDS activism and stuff. Like in the late 80s and all through the 90s, I think Highways was like a real hot spot and like hub for that scene. But I came like around the millennium, so it was like changing. And Tim stepped down as the artistic director. Danielle Brazel stepped in. And so there was like a shift in energy and I don't know. I think LA can be isolating too. So I wasn't like so networked exactly.
Right.
I felt sort of alone in what I was doing. Like I knew Hunter Lee Hughes was doing a solo gay show, Flight of the Monarchs. But yeah, so I just started kind of performing at Highways, doing like mixed gay nights.
Mm-hmm.
Then that slowly evolved into curating gay
okay.
nights on my own. And I did a boyfriend piece with this guy who was my boyfriend. And we toured that for a while. And that was kind of when, you know, we finally did like a full length and then took it around to San Francisco, New York. Then eventually we broke up. At the same time, I started to run this, like, we called it like a psychedelic glitter rock theater troupe called the Discount Cruise to Hell.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Did you yeah. ever see that?
I think I did.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was fun. And, you know, and so that was like, in a way, it felt like a lot of, you know, just experimentation and playing. So we did that. It was sort of like a theater troupe / band. And so I was running mm. that as well as then doing these gay men's night on the side. And then as those both sort of came to a close, I felt like I want to do, you know, solo shows. And I got inspired to do the gay histology pieces
okay.
and to perform about gay history. And then that's also when Queer Mondays was born. I was like, oh, I want to take, you know, like this group work that I've been doing and like collaborating with other queer artists and empowering them and providing a platform you know, have it be monthly and consistent. And so that held that kind of energy. And then I started doing these gay history projects.
Okay. Well, let's come back to the gay history, but you keep bringing up Tim Miller. And I am unaware of who this is, and probably some of the other listeners would be. So how would you describe what he's done in the past? And
Tim's like the Walt Whitman of performance art or something. He's like a Johnny Appleseed of performance. He's like this major force. Like back in, do you remember when Mapplethorpe got defunded and the NEA defunded all these artists?
I might have not been as connected. I might have been closet gay boy in my own suburbs here in LA, right, and not known. I know that there were defunding of a lot of things. Yeah. What particular work did Mapplethorpe get defunded from? I don't even know if it's relevant.
I don't know. Is it the one where he's like got the whip stuck up his ass?
Probably.
I think. I mean, that's his best photograph, I think. So they can defund him for that. But Tim had a piece called My Queer Body. Uh-huh. And he was defunded. And then they sued the federal government. And I think they won. And anyway, he had sort of launched him into fame. And Tim is great. He like tours all sorts of universities, mm-hmm. Leading workshops, inspiring queer kids to get into performance art, which is totally what he did for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, first writing his work, mm-hmm. or reading his written work, then meeting him and experiencing his workshops and stuff like that was like definitely one of my big mentors and guides. And he's wonderful. It was so, you know, it was just so empowering, especially as a young isolated gay boy, like what you're talking about, to see this man take the stage and like just claim his queerness in such a fierce, empowered way. And sexual and, you know, political combining, you know, mm-hmm. with sort of this, you know, this gay uplifting fun feeling. It's just, he's wonderful.
Tim sounds pretty cool. I'm going to have to look him up after this.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, sure. He's great.
So getting into, I guess, gay historgy, because you mentioned that was kind of like your trajectory. That piece, you had like three parts?
There's a fourth part. It's kind of, it has multiple parts.
How would you describe that to people? Like the concept that how I would describe it is you go through a time machine and kind of have sex with all the different people that you're inspired by, or you're is that right? Like it's a time machine.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
yeah. It's like it's as if I time travel and meet different gay icons. Uh-huh. Yeah, and seduce them or have love scenes with them. Or I mean, it's basically, like a gay history lecture, but disguised as performance art. That was the concept, right, that I had a fetish for gay history and that this was, you know, part of my adventure.
Do you feel like when you're, especially with gay historiography, like that is a character that you're playing when you're doing that? Because
I definitely have like a stage persona. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like an exploded version of myself or something, you know?
Okay.
Like, there's definitely like a stage persona that kicks in for sure.
How did it come about then? Like, was there a particular character, not even characters, right? Their historic person that you were just like, wow, like this person's really hot, or?
Yeah, totally.
How did you get to there?
Yeah, it was that I had read that there was a man named Carl Ulrichs who was called the grandfather of gay rights. And I was like, mm-hmm. what? I didn't, again, no one told me.
Right.
And so I was like, I should look him up. I should read, you know, his ideas and see what he had to say. Mm-hmm. And I was checking it out and I was like, just got really turned on because it felt like what he was saying was still really relevant and still kind of hot. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, if only guys talked like this now, you know, in this like, such an empowered way and such a, you know, there's such a way that he claims his gayness as like God given and as intrinsic and as this natural, beautiful thing that is just, it was really inspiring. So I was like, I should do a performance piece where he's my boyfriend.
Okay.
And cause he had all these, you know, fabulous quotations. I was like, I really want to communicate this to people and share the way that I'm, you know, getting so turned on about it. And so I tried out a short piece, which was just a love scene with Carl. Because I was like, you know, gay history or just history is typically so dry and you know, nothing below the belt or something in history.
Right.
And so I thought, let's see if this even works. And it went really well. Mm-hmm. And it was exciting. So I thought, I could do this with like all sorts of different icons, you know, mm-hmm. across the globe and throughout time. And so that's what inspired it.
Okay. I feel like gay history, it's something of interest to me. So I didn't learn about it until college. So it didn't feel like a super big jump for me, or it was an easy sell to me, I guess. But I'm sure to other people, it was like, what is this? Did you get a lot of reaction from it?
Yeah. I mean, I think mostly people, I mean, I guess you don't hear the criticism from people, but
okay.
People generally liked it, I think, because it was, it was pretty uplifting and fun and had this sex positive, gay affirmative, queer or gay liberationist vibe to it, mm-hmm. which is uplifting. And but certainly, and it, you know, I dealt with this in the very first one, you know, that some people have a problem with claiming certain people in history as gay or as queer,
okay.
you know, like based on like social constructionist theory or something, like that you can't claim someone as gay before the word was invented.
Right. When Oscar Wilde's trial was, I believe.
Yeah, I feel like
the first time.
Well, I know Carl Ulrich's called us Uranians. That
right.
was, and that was like maybe 1862 or something. And right. I feel like homosexuality isn't too far after that mm-hmm. because it caught on a lot more, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fairly recent term.
Yes.
Yeah. Term. What do you, so then how do you reckon with all these same sex loving people, you know, throughout history? And so that was kind of the crux of the drama of the first piece. Mm-hmm. And so that would stir up, you know, some things from people like, oh, you can't say Plato's gay, or you can't say, you know, Emperor Ai of the Han Dynasty is gay or something.
Right.
And I'm like, well, why not?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, they loved men too. There was same sex love there, whether or not, you know, yeah, sure. It's not, you know, it's like both to me. Like, sure, the social construct of how we understand gay and queer now wasn't then.
Yeah.
But I still am pretty sure, you know, that certain physiological things probably happened the same.
Yeah. I think,
you know,
I think the and people love. That make that distinction the most are like academics.
Totally.
Because it's really important in their work. But because mm-hmm. I've been in on James Whale, the director, 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the kind of extras and stuff and horror film. Clive Barker is gay.
Yeah.
And somebody was, I guess he was trying to defend James Whale because people are saying James Whale's films are campy. But it was predates, like, was it Sondheim that said about campy, or whoever mentioned the word campy, it's hard to place it in that concept, right?
Oh.
It's similar to the homosexuality.
Oh, like, interesting.
We can't really call something campy when it predates when the concept of campy happened. But I feel like gay men have probably, there's always been a set of gay men that have been campy. Just like there's always been a set of gay men who have maybe tried to create a gay liberation or some kind of movement.
I think those things go hand in hand too, camp, gay camp and liberation. Like camp, just the theater of the ridiculous is one of my favorite genres of theater. And I feel like, you know, Queer Mondays in a way exists in that sort of exploded style that's, you know, very gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I think it's so empowering. But yeah, I know there's such a debate. So the stuff like that would come up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I just feel like, you know, a tree is a tree. What we can call it what you want, but the tree is still growing, and that there's something eternal about gay soul and queer spirit, just, you know, from the dawn of humankind.
Right. Anyone in particular besides who you mentioned with Historgy that inspired you as well when you were doing your research? Anybody that you were just like, wow?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so many. I mean, it's all, there's so many wows. But let's see, who else? Well, you know, I mean, an obvious one is Whitman. I mean, I also love Edward Carpenter. His ideas are so amazing. He's like, he's sort of like a proto-hippie or like a pre-hippie. I think he introduced the sandal to like Britain, and he was a vegetarian, and he had this place called Millthorpe out on the British, in the British countryside, that was sort of like a, I guess you could call it like a hippie commune or something,
okay.
But it was like a queer one. So sort of this like oasis for queer people to go to. And he had this, you know, beautiful boyfriend, and but he's a great thinker. So his ideas really turned me on, you know, ideas like I think he believed that the Uranian people or gay people, queer people would lead the advanced guard of a new social movement that would replace the cash nexus as the organizing principle of society and replace it with comradeship. That's something I really connect with.
That is a beautiful utopia.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially now when we're in like late stage capitalism.
Right. Look at the mess. Look at the disgusting, reprehensible, destructive mess.
Yeah.
And that that's why I think queer visions are important, and like the symbols inside gay love of egalitarianism and the love of sames, and the way queer people organize and care for each other. You know, you could see that during the AIDS epidemic, or, you know, that like if that was organizing society more, I just think the world needs it.
Well, something that I've also aware of, you know, being in Argentina and, you know, the economic collapse, you kind of see when cultures lose that cash independence that people have to rely on each other. And during that AIDS epidemic, I think the gay culture learned a lot about that.
Yeah.
Nothing that we have the answer to specifically.
Right. I know we're getting lofty, but I think there is, like, you know, a great power in gayness and in queerness. Like, even the fact that we were able to come out of the closet, like,
right.
like we're born into hands of straight people who see us as straight, probably. They're not looking at their baby thinking, oh, here's my lovely queer baby who I love. No, we're getting like heterosexuality mirrored and reflected like our whole lives up in, you know. And so I just think that like it's so powerful to have a queer spirit, because the whole world is saying like, you know, the meaning of life is to have babies and to get married and to buy, you know, purchase products or watch streaming channels or whatever it is. And there's like a, you know, watch streaming channels about getting married and having babies, you know, like there's just so much heterosexual like inundation that like, it's amazing to me that the queer spirit or the gay soul like rises up and just says, no, yeah. I'm going to be me. And that we have this amazing allegiance to like our inner worlds and our desire and our, you know, queer spirits and souls. So I think that's really hopeful for the world.
It's as someone who's, again, doing the Queer Mondays,
Planet Queer. That's right.
I was like, looking at my
It happens all the time.
But being at Planet Queer, are you seeing a change in the young gays that are coming in, the lesbians, the trans, the queers, like in their perception of their self? Because now it's kind of like they can find their group.
Oh, yeah. The doors are wide open now, you know, for personal expression. And yeah, we see all sorts of stuff. It's so diverse at Planet Queer. I mean, you know, there are the artists, you know, the regulars that I love and that perform a lot, of course, but there's always people like moving in and out of the circle or coming through or different, you know, different scenes overlapping there. So I really like that about it.
But have you noticed a difference in the, I don't know if you could tell from their performances, like, are people still dealing with coming out in the same way? That would be a one good touchstone.
You know, I think that's different.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've been bringing up coming out just because I think it's so amazing.
Oh, right.
That we can be so programmed and brainwashed and then something inside just says no and breaks through that. That is power. And I think that's a cool queer power. I mean, in some ways I see people are like sort of fighting systemic issues.
Right.
For sure. And I think a lot of artists, consciously or not, you know, are dealing with, you know, the fallout from having to grow up queer in a queer hating world or a queer repressing world, even though things are better, quote unquote, or more open and more access to resources and stuff. There's still, you know, internalized queer phobia and issues like that, that some artists, especially spoken word artists and stuff, are working with.
Okay.
But Planet Queer also has a real, like, sort of celebratory side.
Okay.
You know, things can be really, you know, we'll get dark and get real. And I mean, people have done, you know, I've cried there. But it also then has this, you know, that uplifting camp, glitter, confetti, bodies, body positive, sex positive work.
Yeah, it probably attracts more of, like, an extrovert kind of personality, too, I imagine. If you're saying it's mostly more uplifting and...
Yeah, I mean, possibly. That's a good question to know. Like, I wonder if the audience is more extroverted or introverted. I mean, the show kind of fosters like I always do this queer activist workout at the beginning, which is like to kind of, it's like a crowd warmer upper, but it's also like to foster community. It gets people like touching a little bit, like they high five each other and, you know, like I have some interactive things that do happen. And I guess sometimes I notice some people who are just not going to be able to do that, but usually, you know, you just get caught up in the energy. But, it's real diverse. You know, there's musicians and, you know, we just did a show that was like for Halloween around the tarot.
Right.
And that brought out some heavy, heavy stuff. It can be a real mixture for sure.
Of course. Yeah. Right. There's no way to predict as well with, you know, what people are going to bring, because you're not curating it like you did the other works before, right?
Right. It's more loosely curated. I mean, I know what people are going to do in their tech, and like I hear, you know, pretty right. much what's going on. But yeah, I like it to just be open, like not up to, you know, my authoritative taste or something like that, you know?
Right.
Like to try to honor that egalitarian spirit of gayness and queerness. And also, I guess, you know, maybe to a fault, I sort of believe just that everyone is unique and what the hell, art is subjective. I mean, I can remember certainly after some shows, people being like, oh my God, so-and-so, that was my favorite piece. And then you turn around okay. and someone's like, oh my God, that was horrible. I hated yeah. that piece. So I'm like, well, you know.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna be open.
Yeah, no, I think that's the rough part about art. When you start, you kind of eventually have to realize how subjective it is.
Totally,
and it has to connect with who it's gonna connect with.
Yeah,
and sometimes you can't control that.
Right,
and I also agree with you saying about you don't want to be too authoritative, because it feels very patriarchal, which is something that we're already living in
totally.
Every day.
Yeah, so it's disgusting. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I understand what you. Yeah.
I mean, I'm running the thing, and we're, you know, Travis Wood and I co-produce it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we put up the decorations and do the advertising and all of that work. But try to, yeah, have it be as like opening and welcoming a space as possible, and a warm space. You know, so many bar events can feel cold or, you know, clicky or pretentious. And
okay.
I hope that we cultivate a warm, open atmosphere.
Well, Akbar is a great space, though. It has a wonderful history, too.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it just has this vibe. Every time I go in there, it's always felt homey.
Oh, that's good.
So,
yeah. They've been so great to us, too, mm-hmm. in letting us do it there.
Has there been any other performance stuff that's going on there?
Yeah, you know, sometimes it feels like Akbar is like an unofficial queer cultural center.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, especially when Planet Queer first started, it was like suddenly so much. It felt like there was like a show every night uh-huh. there. But yeah, they do the queer crafting, and I think they have a ukulele player on Sundays, and there's so much.
Probably a good time to bring up the gentrification of Silver Lake. What has that affected the different things that have been going on there? Because I know everyone talks about the hipsters, positive or negative, but it's changed the culture a little bit. Like, maybe a good example is Circus of Books finally closed, right?
Oh, I know. That's too bad. Yeah, I mean, Silver Lake has completely changed. Like, Libarcito is gone, right. and The Other Side, and MJ's. And yeah, there was like a while that it felt like Silver Lake was just, yeah, that they, mm-hmm. the queerness was being, you know, removed. You know, so that these hipster bars or whatever you'd want to call it
right.
could open. So, yeah, that's definitely true. And Travis, who lived in Silver Lake and has lived there for a really long time, you know, often remarks that, oh, these streets used to be full of guys cruising and now it's, uh-huh. you know, baby strollers.
Yeah.
So there is that. And, you know, we did start a project called the Adonis Project as a reaction when all the bars were closing, like, years ago.
Okay.
Before the ones opened downtown. Because mm-hmm. it really felt like queer space was disappearing.
Yeah.
And so that project was to call attention to that and to transform other spaces into queer spaces. But as far as affecting Planet Queer, I don't know. I mean, it always feels like a kind of diverse crowd there, too. Like, I'm often surprised at how many straight people are there, like, oh, hi,
right.
you know, or allies or whatever. And so, yeah. And you know, we're like an earlier time on a Monday. So it's like 8 on Mondays, third Mondays. So, you know, the bar crowd comes after sort of, you know,
okay.
when we're dancing, you know, like the show's done and then people kind of come in and stuff. You know, they still have their rainbow flag flying and it still feels, you know, like a nice queer presence there.
Yeah. Generationally, most people are aware of gay people and they're moving into the neighborhood and they're aware of that there is the Eagle still or these
right.
other bars. So, I mean, and when they changed Libarcito, which was a tragedy because it had a different gay crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only other gay crowd that caters to like a Latino gay crowd now is Tiempo,
mm-hmm.
Which is down on Western, I believe.
Right.
I think it's Santa Monica
and Western. You're right, yeah.
So we lost that space.
The
Other Side was just genuine, unique in its own. And I don't think we'll get that back.
And that was like, you know, catering mostly to like an older gay crowd.
Yeah.
So it was like sort of, yeah.
But the piano bar. aspect right. of it was very unique.
Yeah, totally.
Of its time, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess now we have karaoke instead.
I guess so. I know this guy, Jose Promise, was doing piano bar at Akbar for a while.
Oh, okay.
But now he's doing it in Berlin.
Oh.
So.
You keep bringing up queer, and I want to make sure we get a definition of what you believe the idea of queer is. And I think we've touched on the themes already, but just to get an official sense from you.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I have sort of an open feeling about what queer means. I guess I use it as an umbrella term.
Definitely all-inclusive.
Right.
Sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I'm gay. You know, I feel like I'm queer. I'm gay. I'm queer. Mm-hmm. So the LGBTQ, but like in homo allies and... You know, I've definitely, I used to do these Get More Gay performance workshops.
Right.
There were people who were, straight but identified as queer who would okay. be a part of that.
I do want to bring up your collaboration with Travis Wood. You bring him up as well. So
yeah.
He's somebody that you co-produce with. So I don't want to make it as though only Ian does this.
Yeah.
I do know that you're bringing him up, so.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So how did you meet him? What, you know?
I met Travis... Travis had been around in the scene. He was a big part of Dream Circus Theater that happened mm-hmm. for years. And I think he was in a Buteau dance troupe or he still is. So he had been around on the scene for a long time. And I know he came to Discount Cruise shows before I knew him,
okay.
which is kind of funny. I became directly aware of him. He started performing at Queer Mondays at Highways a mm-hmm. couple of times. And I was impressed with his work. His physical gesture stuff was just strong. And so we bonded a little bit. And then he was around Jean Natalia's Wig Out that she did for a long time. I think she's still doing that. And then... Eventually, when Queer Mondays moved, or when Queer Mondays ended and Planet Queer started at Akbar, mm-hmm. I was also going to do my solo show and run it, of part one and two of my solo show, put them together and run it. And he just contacted me and was like, hey, do you need help? I realize you're doing five shows at once or whatever it was, two shows at once. I thought, yeah, actually, I need help. I do. You know, that would really be helpful. And can you do this and this and this? And yeah, and it just, it's been a really great partnership. You know, he's super supportive. And so definitely he and I run Planet Queer together.
How important is it to reach out and ask for help when you have several projects happening? he was generous enough to be like, I think he needs some help. But
yeah.
Since then, have you learned hey, every now and then I need to touch base with somebody?
No. I should.
It's always a one-man show.
I guess. I don't know. I think, I'm an only child and I just had to do, it's to do everything. But no, I mean, there are so many people that make Planet Queer happen. David LeBaron mm-hmm. is essential. He's actually had been gone for the last couple of shows because he was out of town doing a show in New York and mm-hmm. Something else. I think he was on vacation the other month or something. And it was oh my God, I can't do this without, it was so much work without
wow.
him. Yeah. I just so value what he contributes. And,
yeah.
Stephen Raines always works the door, which is invaluable. And we've got a DJ, Billy, and we always have someone running the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, and Robert Patrick comes and helps us set up every time. So yeah, while I'm at the head of it, there's tons of people
know,
making it happen and stuff like that for sure.
I think it might be different than so far, I talked to, my painter friends mm-hmm. that, they work alone primarily and then they put their work up. Or mm-hmm. Trevor, a writer, kind mm-hmm. of, you write, maybe you have some editors, but there isn't as much pieces in the art as there is for performance art.
Right.
So for somebody that wants to get into performance art specifically, what are some suggestions for anyone that's listening?
Oh, just send me a message and say you want to perform at Planet Queer. I'll be like, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think just doing it, and going to see what's out there and see what's going on, mm-hmm. that's great. And there's so many different scenes and people doing stuff. Gina Young does this thing called Sorority, which is this queer performance event. It's awesome. And mm-hmm. She's super active. And yeah, I would say meeting people, going to shows, meeting people, and then just doing it. Mm-hmm. I've always been book the date,
Right.
Book it and then create it. You've got to create it now,
Yeah.
And just saying yes as much as you can to things and
right.
just do everything, and try it out.
I definitely feel deadlines help artists
immensely.
And creative people kind of finally get off their butt and work on something.
Yeah. You know, and it's like something to live for, something to, you know, focus on this end, the goal, you know, versus amorphous pieces that might not, you know, form. I think the unconscious needs forms, like, you know, it needs a form.
It needs to be out there. Your stuff needs to be out there, not just in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The world needs it.
Yeah. Or they won't know that they need it until you put it out there.
Yeah.
Is that right? If I'm just echoing what you're saying.
Sure. Yeah. I know. I think, like, I just think of Martha Graham, who's like, you know, you have your own individual experience and it's like your duty to share that. Like, no one else can express anything in your way. You know, it's your life and soul and your body that can put it out there. I dig that. Yeah.
So what's been your proudest thing that you've worked on so far?
Oh, well, I guess the Historgy project, I'm probably the most proud of. It was like so researched and, you know, I wove in my, you know, the issues that I was dealing with personally into it. So it's like this personal, but also historical, but also fun and sexy and campy, you know, just I got to do a lot in those and tour them around. And yeah, that's probably what I'm most proud of.
Okay. What helps you with your discipline to put that work out there?
Well, I think what helped was that I was inspired for it. Like that, you know, getting turned on by Carl and feeling like, oh my gosh. And then this idea like, oh, I could, you know, I could sleep my way through history and it's this whole structure and it's exciting and it's libidinal and it's liberational. And then, yeah, just the more I would like read and learn, the more like turned on I could get, oh, this is great. And, you know, oh, I'm inspired to do Michelangelo and the Renaissance and Da Vinci and then learning about the Sufis. And I mean, it just was like, it was like the world opened up. There's this fabulous book by Robert Crompton called Homosexuality and Civilization, which is like a major source. And I mean, so many sources.
Right.
I think that was definitely what did it, was like following the inspiration. Even same with Adonis Project. What got that underway was that human resources, I knew someone who was there, Oscar Santos, who's wonderful. And he was like, oh, we want a project. Do you have an idea? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't really have an idea. What should I do? Like, but here's this amazing space. And it used to be a movie theater maybe. And then I was like, I just had to really tune in. Like, okay, what do I like? What turns me on? And I thought vintage porn, you know, shot on film, you know, the bodies, the just everything, you know, that it's being filmed like at the time of gay liberation. So it has that flavor at the time of kind of like psychedelics or influencing art. So it's like that. So it's like, okay, that. And it used to be a theater, you know, theater, human resources maybe used to be a movie theater. And then this idea that was on everyone's lips in the bars, all the bars are closing. And I thought, oh, let's take these things, like what's on people's lips and what's inspiring me, and kind of put it together as the themes.
Okay. You're also very fortunate in that you fell into such a sex positive thing, performance art, so that there was never any, let me put it this way, I grew up in a very sex shaming world. So, and I had to find that world. So it was really nice to see that out there. And but it sounds like you were never really aware that there was sex positive or not. You were kind of always, you know, get what I'm trying to get at? Like you're in a world that you can just be like, yeah, gay sex orgy, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, certainly I grew up in a sex shaming world.
Okay.
I mean, the world is that way. I mean, in a certain way, and certainly, you know, gay sex shaming way, you know, that,
oh yeah,
you know, I think that I see gay sex and liberation as like really connected.
Okay.
And gay spirit as really connected with gay sex and libido, that the turn on is what's making all of those things happen. Like they have the same source. So connecting them just felt right. And, you know, I think performance art on a certain level lends itself to, you know, sexual expression as well.
Right. Well, let's get into which artist you're keeping your eye on nowadays.
Oh, I'm all Maria Montez or something. I'm like watching old 40s musicals or something, or, you know, Reg Park from the old Hercules films in the 60s or the artists. No, let's see. There are some great artists right now. Martin Matamoros is really an amazing. Do you know Martin?
Yeah. Asher. formerly Rich.
Yes.
The artist formerly known as Rich.
Oh, I love Rich. I miss I haven't met Asher yet, actually. I haven't seen him since the
He officially called me as Asher like a month ago.
Oh,
so
cool. I know, it's like only been in like conversations like this where it comes up that I'm like, oh yeah, you know, Asher. I say Asher and then, you know, we make the adjustment. You know Martin through Asher.
Yeah. But go ahead and describe what Martin, you like about Martin's work.
Oh my
work,
gosh. Or... Martin's work is so excellent. I mean, Martin, he is just very particular and very fine artist. You know what I mean? Like, he's precise and it's rehearsed and he works hard, I guess is what I'm saying. He pours a lot of energy and libido into his work. Not only his stage work, but he does amazing visual art and writes plays. And so I think Martin is always someone to be watching and seeing what he's, you know, what he's cooking up.
Right.
Because it's going to be quality. It's going to be gay and queer. It's going to, you know, have a lot of heart in it.
Okay. There was the villains thing. Mm-hmm. I think you were part of that?
He did that at Highways. That was a fun one.
Okay.
Yeah, he has a show called Gentlemen, which is a gay male adaptation of the movie The Women.
Okay.
Which is, you know, that all woman movie. And so many. He just did like a Pinocchio play at the Lyric Theater. Went over so well.
Yeah.
It was so fun. Very moving. And so creative. Yeah, he's got an Alice in Wonderland show. I mean, he's just got so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have no problem making the compliment that, like, even when I'm not in the mood to do something creative, it's always just fun to go out and watch someone else that's doing something. You know, that's why I've seen a lot of your stuff and I go to readings and, you know, even if it's just like not happening for me.
Uh-huh.
And I want to encourage anyone else that's listening to just go out there, like, once a month or every 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, you're someone who's constantly creating stuff. So for you, it's, you know, it's probably not even something to think about, but there are probably other people that are driving in their car right now and, you know, look something up in your area and go check it out, right?
Yeah, go out, get inspired, you know, get turned on, you know, check out what's happening, get judgmental, whatever needs to come out, you know.
Be hateful on Twitter.
Right, yeah, exactly. You can dish about the artists.
Yeah. And,
you know, it's all part of it.
It is.
It is.
And is there anybody currently that's inspiring you besides Martin? Like, just even, like, music, TV, movies?
Huh. Hmm. Well, you know, I'm into Caitlin Aurelia Smith. I don't know if you know her music. She's so interesting and fun. I got to see her at like Union Station. She played a show at Union Station. We like took the train down there and saw her, and she uses all this like vintage electronic music to create sort of these ambient but experimental stuff. It's beautiful to listen to, very creative. So that's, I guess, what I'm listening to musically. An Abra, I kind of like her. She's just so soulful in her voice. But I mean, there are so many interesting queer artists that inspire me. The Mego Man is amazing. ODSRE is amazing. I mean, I could go on and on.
Of course.
Planet Queer is such a hotbed of rare birds and people who are, you know, just real people, like, mining their own unconscious for this creative gold, and they put it on stage and it works and it doesn't work and it's everything, and it mostly works. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So that really inspires me. It's just getting to see people up there doing their thing.
Right.
You know, I much prefer like a real, raw, untrained performance. I mean, I respect trained performances too, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just love the queerness on stage.
And that's definitely something that, again, when I brought up the word frontline, that you're seeing a lot of stuff passing through and you're kind of raw beginnings of a lot of artists.
Yeah, I love seeing that too. Like, so many people, like the Mego Man, like, I mean, he's always been like a great artist and stuff, but I think he had like put it on the back burner and then started getting into Planet Queer and doing that more. And now he does his own show called Medicine, which happens on the new moon a number of times a year. And there's just been a number of people like that who have like gotten inspired at Planet Queer or reconnected to their creativity and then go off and do their own thing, do their own shows, stuff like that.
All right. I think we covered a lot of the topics here.
Okay.
And if there's anything else we want to get back into later, we can.
Okay.
So I want to thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. And go ahead and let anybody know, like, any of the Facebook or how to find you.
Well, there's planetqueer.org. planetqueer.org. So you know about that. It's always Planet Queer's on the third Monday of the month at Akbar in Silver Lake. And yeah, you could message me on Facebook or Instagram, Ian McKinnon, and and say hi. That'd be awesome.
Any other upcoming things that people should know about?
Well, Planet Queer Big Bang is taking place November 20th. That's the last show of the year.
Okay.
So it's going to be awesome. We're going to be doing a play as a part of it as well. There's a group performance piece that I'm in and directing with some people. Should be awesome.
Very cool. Well, if you're in the area, come and check it out. And thanks again for being on the show, Ian.
Sure, anytime.
Thanks for listening to Never Meet Your Heroes podcast. Find us at nevermeetyourheroespodcast.com, where you can post comments, ask questions, and interact with artists and listeners. Also, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. And if you're on YouTube, don't forget to comment, like, and subscribe.